This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I say trenches metaphorically, but we are in an information war, aren't we?
Yeah, I don't think it's a metaphor at all. I think it's actually literally and figuratively the truth.
When you say literally, though, what do you mean?
It's reality. That's what it means. It's what's happening everywhere. It's not an issue with one zip code. It's present on every square inch of this earth. Surveillance technology is putting us in a hole that we last visited during medieval times all over the world. No matter what country you're in, what your history is, we are headed back there because that's what the surveillance state has as their dominant narrative.
And nobody's safe, no matter where you are.
Well, I think safety, just like Einstein said, time is relative. Everything is relative. Safety is relative. I happen to live right now in the safest country in the world. Now, I'm sure there's many people who listen to this that would argue, but I would argue vehemently back that some of the other places that people would talk about, like Singapore and Dubai, while their societies are fine, I don't believe that their leadership and who they're tethered to are so safe. I think it's a, how shall we say, a disquieting comfort that people live in. And I think they're in their own little matrix. I think here in El Salvador, they were plugged in to that matrix. And then the people were given the opportunity in 2019 to actually vote out the matrix. And I would try to explain to people, you know, if you understand Bitcoin, the first thing Bukele did was give the ultimate source of freedom back to people when he made Bitcoin legal tender. And many people who don't understand really what money is and what Bitcoin is, it's the same thing that the royal family, the papacy, the people that control the surveillance state are interested in, alloidial title. Alloidial title means that there is nobody superior to that asset that can confiscate it from you. And right now, that's the only thing that regular people in every zip code in the world can participate in and basically puts you outside the system. So where we are right now in El Salvador is we just basically had Bukele tell the World Finance Committee, which is controlled by the Federal Reserve and the families that are in there, and that's true just about everywhere in the world, including your country, that we are not going to be plugged in to that Federal Reserve system. We're going to do this outside of it. Yeah, we can restructure debt and this and that. But the reason why we get favorable terms in El Salvador now is because the entire country, the GDP is backed by alloidial title because they own Bitcoin on their national treasury. This is what makes El Salvador radically different than any other zip code on the planet. Now, could that change if the government here changes? Yeah, I think that's a possibility. But where else could you say that the people actually are the ones that brought this change in? This was not a leader at some federal level who, you know, was installed base. This was a mayor of the biggest city here in El Salvador who did a good job in a couple of places. And then when he got the federal job, he did something that nobody expected him to do. He returned monetary freedom back to his people. And it turns out the criminals that were president before him, they actually dissolved the central bank of El Salvador. And, you know, when you look everywhere in the world, like countries close to your home country, like Zimbabwe, it's a perfect example. Africa is absolutely littered with currencies that are trashed. And you have to realize why they're trashed, because what's happening on the entire continent, the IMF, the World Bank, the Chinese, they all have the same thing. They're using usury to put people in economic slavery. And that's been, you know, a story that's probably, as far as I'm concerned, goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. And El Salvador is the only country in the world that can say 100% they're out of it. How do we know that what I'm saying here is not hyperbole? If you would have looked at when, I would just tell you 3 years ago, the Wall Street bonds of El Salvador were close to default. Today, they have the best performing bonds in the world. So what has this mimicked? What's another point in history where we can look to see where our country's fortunes have changed on a dime with a leader, and we can link it back to one specific maneuver? Well, we didn't have Bitcoin in 1801, but when Napoleon was fighting the Bank of England, the Rothschilds, the royal family, he needed money So what did he do? He sold the Louisiana Purchase to the United States. And Thomas Jefferson, who is very important in writing but not only our Constitution, but our Declaration of Independence, he was a thought leader. The purchase of the Louisiana landmass was actually unconstitutional at that time. It was such a good deal that they bent the rules to take it in. What happened to the United States after 1801 in this purchase? Basically, it was equivalent to doing what Michael Saylor has done with MicroStrategy, like buying 300,000 Bitcoin for the 13 colonies that were tethered to this story. They had just gotten their freedom in the last 20 years. And ironically, that's exactly where Bukele is right now. He's about 20, 25 years since the Civil War. And the last little bit of tyranny that he had to get rid of was the gangs. And that maneuver, getting rid of the gangs, happened after Bitcoin was made legal tender. I submit to people that I don't think the war on the gangs could have preceded the freedom and money. And believe it or not, the reason why the gangs are as important is because that was the way Bukele eliminated the inflation rate for the local people. Because why they were getting shucked down by the criminals, about $300 a month, that's a big deal. Because most people, you know, where you live, don't understand that people in El Salvador make about $1,000 a month. So that's having 30% of your income taken away by like a shadow government, which was what the gangs really were. And when Bukele gave them Bitcoin first and then got rid of the gangs, you literally see a 30% increase in spending from the local people. It completely changed, you know, safety on the streets. And then what happened? He kept buying one Bitcoin a day and putting on the national treasury. And magically, El Salvador went from one of the worst places in the world to live to one of the best places, literally in 4 or 5 years. You can't find any place in recorded human history that's been a turned around like this. The closest one I can come up with is the one I shared with you, is when we got the Louisiana Purchase. Literally, we sent two explorers out. Jefferson sent out Lewis and Clark. And within 2-3 weeks, they found water underneath the land of the Louisiana Purchase. And they told the president at that time, they said, look, bare minimum, even if you think you made a bad purchase, this could be turned into the biggest farmland probably in the world. Turned out that was a pretty big understatement because it was true. But the real benefit, the real power of the Louisiana Purchase was that it gave the United States a waterway from the Gulf of Mexico to penetrate the entire interior of the continent. And that created an absolute economic superpower. That's what a loidal title really is. In other words, the Mississippi River cannot be taken away from either the American government or the people. Now, we're living in a time where I would submit that the current administration, and I wouldn't say current administration, I'd say every administration since JFK, has actually attempted to take away most of the natural or alloydial tidal resources that we have in the United States from the people to use it for the industrial military complex benefit. But I think that process right now is ongoing in the United States. And I think people like you who are foreigners to really what the politics are all about in the United States, you need a history lesson to understand truly what's going on. The election is probably the first step either in the liberation or potentially becoming prisoners economically in our own country. Right now, that trend is positive everywhere in the world where people are being thrown into economic slavery. Your continent specifically leads the way. They've been in economic slavery literally probably for 200 years. And most of it is because of the people that were installed as power. The sad part is Africa has exactly the same benefit that not only the United States has, but also that El Salvador has. You have massive natural resources. And that way, you're very, very similar to the modern story, which is what Milei is doing in Argentina. He's actually gotten rid of 80 to 100 years of communism, and he's now deregulating and open up the resources for the people and turning it back to them and getting rid of big government and allowing people to have their freedom and liberty turned back. In that way, he's taken the charge of what Bukele's done. And the interesting thing about Milei is also a Mises or Austrian-based economic person. He understands how money really works, and he understands the theories behind Bitcoin. And why do I think this is a largely untapped idea in the rest of the world. Well, you had Bobby Kennedy and Trump literally this summer, 2 months ago, get on the stage in Nashville during a Bitcoin conference, and both of them said the same thing, that if elected, that we will make Bitcoin a grand reserve asset to underpin the U.S. dollar. Why? They both understand the U.S. dollar is failing because of the criminals that are in the banking cartel that controls the world. And you should know this better than anybody, especially in South Africa. That banking cartel, through De Beers and the royal family, they're fucking terrible. And they've been terrible for every place they've colonized. The other big country in Europe that's colonized Africa is France. France has made it their undying wish to pillar and steal all the resources from Africa while enslaving the African people. So what Africa has faced under imperialism, under what we've had probably for the last 250 years, is the same thing that the United States now is being faced with on November 5th. It's the same thing that the people of El Salvador faced in 2019, but the people in El Salvador did something that no one could believe. They didn't vote for the status quo. In other words, they put their apathy and nihilism by the side and they said, look, we've tried everything else to try to get our country on track. We're going to trust this new young millennial who has different ideas called new ideas, and let's see what he does. Well, he did such a good job in 4 or 5 years, they reelected him, which ironically was against their constitution. And guess what? They thought he did such a good job that they said, we'd like to have this leadership last longer than one term because we've suffered under bad leadership. So guess what? They actually changed the constitution so that they could vote their president. And here's the irony for the people who are outside, people in your country, people in my country, who talk shit about Bukele. He only got 53% of the vote the first time he was elected. Do you know how much he got the second time? Close to 90% of the people's vote. So
what?
You need to listen to what the people say, not what the media says, not what the politicians in your country say. Understand that right now, the people of El Salvador are picking sovereignty, liberty, and freedom over anything. And just remember, those things, it's not always an even thing. Are there things in El Salvador that I wish, you know, would be better than they are right now? Yes, but this is the path. This is their path. Just like, you know, things could have been better in the United States from 1801 through 1850, but we had to go through a civil war. And ironically, that civil war was fomented by the same people that have fucked your country up. That's the royal family and loyalists to the crown. Why? Because guess what? The royal family, specifically King George, and then eventually Queen Victoria, who was in power after that, they wanted fucking the United States back. They couldn't believe what happened in the first 70, 80 years of the United States. And the thing that made it even a bigger, bitter pill for them is even though the Rothschilds and the royal family defeated Napoleon at the Battle of Waterloo and got a lot of their money and power back, it turns out that that little thing that Napoleon sold to Thomas Jefferson for $3 million turned out to be one of the worst things ever. This is the reason why I tell people that even in absolute destruction, the seed of recovery is always present. And it turned out, for the evil empire, which is the royal family, which is the banking cartel, you created a superpower. Napoleon actually created a superpower. And if you understand why Napoleon hated the people that colonized your country, it was pretty simple. It was usury. Again, it's a story of money. And what did Napoleon and the Napoleonic Wars want to do? What was the French Revolution really all about? It was about eliminating usury from the banking elites to control people, to put them in economic slavery. That's been the history of humanity, literally, since the Egyptian pharaohs. Now, we could argue that there was probably more civilizations that died out before that. We've got some archaeological proof of that in Turkey, Göbekli Tepe, but that's probably not the topic for this podcast. The bottom line is, as a neurosurgeon, for me to be a good doctor, I have to make good diagnosis. And what I'm trying to explain to you, and you asking me this question, is you need to understand where we are in the world in every zip code to understand the things that we need our leaders to do. And while I have a huge problem with criminal leadership, criminal cabals, and criminal politicians, I will submit to you that in most of your country and your continent, that it's been the people that have allowed these people to do what they do. Most of the slavery in my country came from Black people selling Black people to the people that were in power. But, you know, the Black people that are in the United States right now, they don't want to hear that truth, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, some of the things that have happened in your country, like, we all know that apartheid was a really bad deal. We also look at Nelson Mandela as a guy that was, I guess, a flashpoint. But is the story around Nelson Mandela really great? The legacy after that? Is South Africa where we really want it to be? No, the answer is absolutely not. It's still a country, just like the United States, that's torn with racism. It's also not good for supposedly the people that Mandela liberated. They're still floundering. They're not doing well. But that's the same story that happened in our Civil War. Our Civil War was in 1850, and it was about slavery that those loyalists to the crown brought over to run the fields in the 13 colonies. The interesting thing is that story is still active in the United States almost 150, 170 years later. We haven't solved that problem. And I submit to you the reason why, because the real issue wasn't the color of your skin. It was your money real or not? And when your money is not real, it's the root of all problems. And that, my friend, is what makes Bukele's zip code different than everybody else's. He's the only leader on the face of the earth, in my view, that's made the proper diagnosis that it comes down to usury, comes down to decentralized money, comes down to decentralized science, because when you fix the money, you truly can fix the world. The problem is the fix is going to take a while, you know, to generate through multiple different parts of our existence, not only here, but that is the reason 4 years ago, I moved here 2 weeks before legal tender law took foot. Why? Because I am an aficionado of history. I know my history and I know exactly how important the story of money and usury is. It's the source of most of the political problems in the entirety of human history, not in anybody's country.
A common thread in what you speak about is decentralization. I mean, you were just talking a moment ago now about Bitcoin, but the last few years have blatantly shown the importance of decentralized healthcare. Is that not right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what the lesson of COVID has taught us all. And I would say some of us have gotten the lesson and some of us just keep watching Netflix, drinking coffee, and watching soccer games for Circus Maximus because they don't really want to think about truly what's happened.
Why do you think some of us saw through it and others didn't?
Well, I think that's where the science comes in. My belief is that when you have good redox, meaning when you're really healthy, you don't have a lot of inflammation in your brain from the things that the modern world puts in there, that's basically a positive charge, because I'm going to try to make this easy. Redox means you have a large negative charge. So when you have a large negative charge in the most important organs in your body, which your brain and your heart, you become a better thinker. And when you become a better thinker, not only do you remain curious, but you also ask really good questions based on the reality that's unfolding to you. Turns out the people that are running the banking cartels, the industrial military complex in the United States and the EU, all the major governments around the world that are linked, you know, to dominant places like the World Economic Forum, the WHO, they have had their thinking usurped by these experts. And these experts are all linked to globalists and a global agenda. The global agenda for me is the real virus that's behind COVID. And that's the thing that you need to be inoculated from. Like the vaccine you need there is what Bukele gave to his people. And I will be the first one to tell you, did Bukele make mistakes around the decentralized science? Yeah, because he allowed a lot of his health ministry to plug his people into what the WHO and WEF said. And I've talked to him about it. And he said, look, Jack, I'm not a scientist. I didn't understand how these things linked. He goes, but now when you sat down and explained to me how this links to the money, it looks like I made a good decision in 2019 before the pandemic to give my people Bitcoin, because it seems like that's a big part of fixing this. And I said, yeah, it really is. Now just realize there's going to be a lot of people who took the jab And they're going to be injured from this over the next probably, I'd say, 50 generations. The issue is the globalists need not only to cull the herd, but they also need people to be hamstrung. This is the COVID jab is kind of like taking a slave in South Carolina or taking a slave in South Africa, say 50 years ago, and cutting their Achilles tendon or cutting their hamstring so that they can't run off the plantation. In other words, they're stuck there so that they are working for their master, which is the person that is controlling their labor. And that's very, very similar to what happens with money. And when you begin to understand that the globalist agenda, especially, I mean, you should really understand this. I mean, Bill Gates has used both India and Africa as his playground for his bioweapons program with vaccination. And I think even some of the people in Africa know that. But some of the poorest people, the people that have been afflicted with bad governance, bad leadership in Africa, they have been, how shall I say, sacrificed at the altar of Gates and Gavi and everything else. And when you realize why, it's because Africa has a lot of young people. Africa has a lot of people that can make a huge workforce. You're seeing now that Europe and America, through the open borders and immigration, is allowing these people to come in to their countries. Why? Because they're going to need replacements for the people that they've culled. Most of these people that they're culling right now are people that are owed a lot of money in the older system, meaning from pensions, IRAs, SEP IRAs. So when these people are made sick and they're eventually eliminated over the next 15, 20, 30, 40 years, then you're going to need somebody to recapitulate the labor force. Why? Because some of the other things that the globalists stand for, which is ruining reproductive rights in history, they support abortion. They support the use of IUDs and chemical castration to control population. But it turns out, if you look at just about every big Western state, their infertility rates are rising, fertility rates are collapsing. What does it turn out? Places like Africa don't have that. Why? They're powered mostly by the sun. They're undeveloped. These are what I call 0G to 3G countries. They are not afflicted by the same problems that the people in the United States or Europe are afflicted by. And that means they're a source, a good source code to replace the older animals, the animals that have now become a drag on the old world system that was built by the Rothschilds and the royal family, I would say probably after 1812. And we're now at that inflection point where the global reserve currency that all of our countries use, which is the American dollar, is now at the precipice of collapsing. And pretty much every monetary unit, no matter what country you're in, at some point is tethered to what happens to the US dollar. That's just a fact. Now, your country has actually broken a little bit free of that because it's part of the BRICS. And the BRICS, however, has been heavily pounded into the ground. If you don't believe me, we can go back to 2009, 2012, when Gaddafi from Libya, who is an African country, if you ask Libyans back at that time, Gaddafi did a lot of good things for his people. But in the United States and the West, he was vilified as a dictator. And the interesting part was it was a very rich resource country that could afford to do things that most other countries could not. But what did he really do? He challenged the hegemony of the U.S. at his only speech, you know, at the U.N., and he pointed out very casually that the preamble of the U.N. Charter and the rules and regulations are incongruent. And the reason why they're incongruent, who wrote the preamble? That was FDR. That was right after the war. The U.N. only exists because it was the second coming of the League of Nations, which was the idea that Woodrow Wilson put in the Treaty of Versailles. And it was written by the victors of World War II. So you need to understand really the history of World War II to understand what Gaddafi was saying. Most people in the world today that are breathing today do not understand that history. Why? Because when you win, the victors are like AI. They can wipe the truth free from history books. And that's exactly what the people in the United States did. And then they allowed the industrial military complex of the United States, specifically the military and the CIA and FBI, who was those leaders, George Kennan for the CIA and General Groves, who retired and was forced out by Eisenhower outside the system. The rules and regulations of the UN Charter were put in place. These were not the ideas that FDR clearly had and shared with Stalin in Tehran in 43 and at Yalta at 44. And it turned out this changed everything in the world. In fact, I will tell you, that single maneuver not only turned Americans slowly into economic slaves over the last 70, 80 years, it guaranteed that African nations would never, ever get out of the slavery that they were forced into by the imperialist colony powers that ruined your country. And I think Gaddafi, in my view, was the leader in Africa in the early 2000s that pointed this out. And he was killed by our State Department and CIA over his opinion. And you have to realize, when you challenge the hegemony of the United States at that time, they would do that. Right now, the United States, if Gaddafi was alive, I doubt they would come after Gaddafi, because right now, they are now pointing their Tomahawk missiles at their own people. They are now coming after we the people. Why? Because they've secured everything else that the globalists need. Now they have one last piece. That last piece, you probably have figured out if you've been paying attention to me, it's control of the money. They need to make programmable money. That's the trend that's going on in the EU. It's going on in Australia. It's actually beginning to happen in Canada. The interesting thing is, in your continent, there's a couple of places, specifically Nigeria right now, where you have runaway inflation. And what are the local people using to make it? They're using Bitcoin, shockingly. And what do you have the local militia and politicians trying to do? To take a loyal title away from the people. So I would say to you that the zip code on the planet has relative amounts of freedom. The freedom of money dictates how much decentralized science you really get. Like, we all know, the one beautiful thing I find in my heart for the people of Africa, the public health of Africa proves that COVID was completely made up. Nobody who's Equatorial African had to worry about COVID at all, with or without a jab. It was a non-issue. But guess what? People in Europe, people in Australia, people in Canada, people in the United States don't even know that what I just told you about your own continent is absolutely true. And because Africa is considered, you know, I would say even maybe fourth or fifth world, the reason why I have a soft spot in my heart is because you guys are more connected to nature and less connected to the electromagnetic power grid that the industrial military complex has put everywhere. So guess what? We get to see more of the truth in decentralized science from the rural backwaters of Africa than we do just about anywhere else.
You dropped in the word sunlight earlier, and I'm not going to let that one slide, because it's a really, really important piece of the puzzle. The most amazing thing is, I shouldn't have to even be asking this question, but why and how is sunlight so important?
Well, let's use my country and your country as an acronym, because I can tell you, you can fact check this, and I'm sure people who listen to this from your country and the rest of the world can fact check it as well. I find it interesting that people with dark skin who are Equatorial Africans who were brought over here in slave trade had some of the worst outcomes in New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Detroit. They died at record rates, but yet the same people with the same skin who lived in Equatorial Africa had literally almost no death rate at all. So that brings up the question, was COVID racist, or maybe was COVID trying to teach us a story about quantum biology? Maybe the real issue was that people who had strong sunlight were able to fight off. Maybe sunlight was the vaccine. And when you take people who are very, very sensitive to the effect of sunlight, why does black skin exist? It exists because the sun is so strong. So, you know, as an African, even though you're on the bottom of the continent, you know that Nairobi is at 8,000 feet at 1 degree north. These people that live in this country, their skin is purple. It's not even dark. The reason why is because since they live at such high elevation at the equator, that they have to have maximum protection from the sun. The interesting part is, when you take somebody like that and you make them live, say, in Canada, they actually lose all their immunity. So natural immunity goes away, because it turns out it's the T cells in your skin and then the effector B cells that actually fight off most of our diseases. And the problem is, even in Equatorial Africa, you know that not everybody lives an outdoor existence. Westernization in Africa has played a role. people use cell phones there. People have towers. People stay indoors. But when we look at the classic African tribes that are there, like the Maasai, we see a decidedly different story than what we see in the United States. And it turns out that people that live at much higher latitudes than what their quantum biology skin says, they did terrible in the United States at that time. In fact, our country led the world in COVID deaths. Now, there was a lot of malarkey decided about that, but people tried to convince us early on that it was medical comorbidities that it was linked to. If you actually look at the science that's been parsed out by several people in the United States, turns out that was even a lie. Turns out most of the death rate actually occurred via the ICD-9 codes because we incentivized hospitals to actually harm patients, okay? None of that data exists in Africa. And here's the interesting thing. I look at equatorial Africans the way I look at Amish people in the United States because they're equivalent. They are people, while they don't have the same color skin, they don't have the same beliefs, they actually are both unplugged from the things that actually really made us sick, which was the power grid and the electromagnetic power grid. And the difference was that people with white skin who lived at high latitude had the same outcomes as the black people who lived in equatorial African. So that tells you that this isn't a racial thing. This actually is a photoelectric reality of the disease. And what did the people in the United States, the World Health Organization and the World Economic Forum tell you? We'd like you to go inside and social distance. The exact opposite thing that the Amish people did and the exact opposite thing that the people in equatorial Africa did. And yet we now know 4 years later that they didn't have the same outcome as the people that were in Massachusetts, New York, and New Jersey, or Michigan, who actually followed the Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci recommendations. Because that was designed to harm you. The whole goal in the United States was to get people to go to the hospital. And then in the hospital, they had algorithmic medicine set up by 23andMe, Google, Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, and those people were funneled straight to ventilators. And it turns out those were the real people that died. It wasn't people with multiple comorbidities. It was people that got on the path that was incentivized by the government to create a story that COVID was deadly when it really wasn't. We know that from the Amish people in the United States. We also know it from your continent. It's clear cut. We even have evidence in Central Africa that many Central Africans, when their blood was drawn, they were immune to COVID naturally. They had natural immunity. That was hidden by the World Health Organization and the World Economic Forum. They didn't want that information out. In fact, the United States government actually changed the definition of what natural immunity was. They even changed the definition of what vaccination was to keep the charade ongoing. But this is the reason why. What I saw in Africa told me that this was a total bullshit story. And we have guys out here in the United States who you probably don't know about, a guy named John Bedoin, who has taken data from states in the United States, funneled them all down. He's got a video out right now on Rumble that I would strongly recommend you put in your show notes here. It's all over my Twitter handle and my social media page today. But when you listen to it, he's took the most accurate thing you could, death certificates, and put them against vaccination databases. And he proves beyond a shadow of a doubt to a very legal determination, these cases in the United States will funnel through. They eventually will see the light of day. What's the big problem? On November 5th, if Kamala gets reelected, you're going to have a criminal attorney general who will block the truth from seeing. This is the problem in the United States. The Supreme Court takes 4 or 5 years to act, but the attorney general acts acutely. So this is the real reason why this election is really important. It's not important for the shit that you hear in South Africa or the shit that you hear in Africa or the shit you hear in Europe or Australia. This is important because what's really on the ballot in the United States is a global socialist one world government led by the bankers, the royal family, and the papacy. Those are the people that are all of our problems. Every zip code in the world, those are the people that we need to put out of our misery. We need to get rid of them completely. My view If I was running the show, I would have each one of them sent to Guantanamo Bay, and you'd never hear from them ever again. That's how I feel about it.
I've got mixed views on Trump. I like him a lot, and I think he's probably the best, you know, outcome for the United States. But what do you make of warp speed?
Yeah, well, I can tell you what I make of it. It's pretty simple. And again, this is where you have to know the history. Trump, I would say to you, he's been woken up by his first term. Remember when he came in his first term, the industrial military complex did everything they possibly could to hamstring his first term. But what did Trump do? He taught most of the American populace that he was an obedient idiot. In other words, he put all his friends in the cabinet, and it turned out, who were his friends? They were members of the Zionist Federation who are linked to the families that control the Federal Reserve. Now, everybody knows that Trump was a businessman first. So the businessman, when he came in from Queens and got into real estate in Manhattan, who did he work with? He worked with the people that controlled the banking industry. He's a fiat guy. So it stands to reason that he would also be polluted by the people in centralized medicine. Why? Because the people that sit at the cantillion effect of the banking industry is Big Pharma. How did we get Big Pharma in the United States? From Rockefeller. That's through the Flexner Report. And this is what I say, my friend, when you don't understand the history of the United States, you truly, you'll never understand what's really going on between Trump and Harris right now. When Trump was the president, he was convinced that Operation Warp Speed was a good idea. And I can tell you, it's the same thing that happened to Bukele. I told you, Bukele's not a scientist, neither is Trump. So he relied on the people that were around him. It turned out the people that were around him were part of the conspiracy to kill people. So guess what? The answer was, unlike Bukele, who went in and got rid of all the corrupt judges, went into Congress and got rid of them with the military, Trump didn't do that. In fact, what did Trump find out? His best friend before he was a Republican, when he was a Democrat, was John F. Kennedy Jr. And he always said that if I became president, I would find out who killed your dad and release it. Well, guess what? He did find out. And you know what the problem was? They were all his friends that helped him got elected. Therein lies the problem. So when you figure out that you basically put the criminals inside the beltway around you and you figure it out too long and you don't get rid of them, then you begin to see Trump in a different light. So what has Trump done now? Trump now has taken one of their mortal enemies, which is Robert Kennedy Jr., and plugged him into his team. I hope that he takes the job that his dad had in 1963 through, I should say 1960 through 63. It's when he was the attorney general for his brother. And he goes after the deep state. The reason they killed him in 1968 is because they couldn't have the truth of what I'm telling you leached out. If you want to know the reason why they've tried to kill Trump three times now, it's the same reason, my friend. So why did Trump do a smart thing by putting J.D. Vance as the vice president? Because for the industrial military complex, he's probably more unpalatable than Trump. So if you're going to kill Trump, you're going to get stuck with J.D. Vance, and he's probably not going to play ball with you either. So I think right now, Trump gets a pass from me for Operation Warp Speed. And I'll be the first one to tell you, if you followed my Twitter feed, you would know this. I was not voting for Trump. I was voting for Bobby Kennedy. But then Bobby Kennedy sat me down and told me, Jack, I need you to vote for Trump because we've got pretty strong ties that we're going to be tied to the transition team. And the things that are going to be really important in changing the United States are going to be turned over to us. That's when I found out that Elon Musk is also going to be part of the slash and burn chainsaw issues that is going to go after federal bureaucracies, similar to what Malay's doing in Argentina. So when I hear that, I would agree with your assessment or your diagnosis that Trump is the better of the lesser evils. But do I trust him either? Let me be very clear with you, because you know my mouth is not a bakery if you've listened to any of my interviews. Thinking a politician is really great is like thinking a stripper in a strip bar loves you when you're giving her money, okay? It's not. You just need to realize that there always is a lesser of two evils, and then it's incumbent upon you is to go for it. Now, the people of El Salvador got lucky. Turns out their politician is cut from the same cloth as I believe George Washington was. In fact, I've said multiple times on multiple podcasts, I believe so far in the 6 years that Bukele's been president, he is like George Washington on steroids. Now, does that mean he's going to be that way for the remainder of his term? No. Who's going to decide that? the people of El Salvador. Why? Because the rest of the criminals that were running the country, those political parties have been decimated. And they, I have no doubt that they'll come back somewhere down the road, but they will not be entrenched like they were because the people were asleep. They didn't understand how money was the root of all evil. And the other big thing that's happened is Bukele's been fortunate because the United States now is going after its own people instead of people in Central America. I mean, prior to this, from the Monroe Doctrine, we've ruled Central and South America like they're our bitch, kind of like your country was ruled by the royal family for a long time. And when you understand that the world is clearly changing and people do have a voice, then I think change is possible. But change is easy. Making it sustainable is the single most important thing that I think modern people don't realize. That's really what we're missing. You need to have political stability. And political stability comes from a populace that is able to think critically. And what is the role of the government, at least in the United States, is to make sure that its people cannot think critically. It's make sure that the truth is obscured. That's why they've ruined the First Amendment, which is freedom of the press. It's also the reason why they now pander to the lowest common denominator. Why? It's called the Cliven-powered doctrine. And what is that doctrine based in? It's based in Atlas Shrugged, the book written by Ayn Rand, who people forget, she was a Russian that was against the Bolshevik Revolution. And she said, when a country is filled with, you know, 50, 55% idiots, then democracy rules. Constitutional republics don't matter. Everybody knows the United States has a constitution, but when you have an attorney general that allows the criminals to run free, which is what we've had for the last probably 30 years, then you can understand why the constitution is almost like the bones of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Yeah, we know it existed, but it's not operational. What's the goal? To replace it with the UN Charter. That's really what's going on. The United States falls. Boy, the rest of you are going to be really sick.
You mentioned Elon, and he's from my side of the pond, so I've got a soft spot for him. But I also have a love-hate relationship with him. What's your take?
Same take as I have with Trump. Right now, he is, I think, part of trying to keep freedom alive. What he's done with Twitter, I give him huge kudos for. But I will tell you, one of the things I don't think people realize is that his technology, getting to space, doing the stuff in the satellites, this is the next plan. Like if you listen to the podcast that I did recently with Danny Jones or the podcast I did with Adrian D'Amico in Australia, is they are going to use Starlink to actually be the next evolution of MKUltra, the Brain Health Initiative. Then it'll be the epoch of Starlink, where you will be able to control the world from satellites and from space. And this is the reason why there's a huge space war between the United States, the EU, and China. Whoever controls space, I think in the 21st and 22nd century, actually will rewrite the boundaries. In this way, what's going on in space is very similar to what happened in World War I and World War II, where the balance of power was transferred from the royal family because they controlled the seas and trade routes. The United States took that back in both world wars. And that's something that the royal family tried to keep intact. Even though they won two world wars, they lost that. They were very unsuccessful. In fact, it's actually pretty much an irony that you could win two world wars but still lose the thing that you needed the most. And yet the United States took it. And what has the United States done? I think now the United States industrial military complex is actually even more evil than the royal family, the papacy, and even the bankers that power both of them. Why? Because they've usurped those bankers as well. But the neocon attitude that came out of World War II, probably more deadly for most of the planet. And I think America is beginning to realize that the nightmare that our military created after winning the war is a real problem. It's something that we're going to have to curb. It's not something the rest of the world can fix. And I think that this election is the first election where the intelligence agencies and the military that both support SpaceX are under attack. While they want Musk to be the guy to help them out in space, they do not want him advocating free speech through Twitter. And this is how you know that we're run by a group of criminals. And you have to realize that Elon is propped up also by fake cheap money. This is the reason why he has a love-hate relationship with Bitcoin, because without cheap fiat money, SpaceX and Tesla really don't get, you know, the stock valuations and the price they get. So very much like Trump and the Operation Warp Speed idea that you brought up, I look at Elon Musk the same way. The thing that Musk has done over Trump, buying Twitter for him, actually is a buffer between him and his masters, the economic masters. How he uses that, or in my opinion, what they're doing right now, they're using Twitter as a Bunsen burner effect to threaten him to fall in the party line. But the problem is the industrial military complex actually needs Musk more than they need Trump. Like Musk as an engineer has the ability to do things that the industrial military complex cannot do without. That's the major difference between Musk and Trump. And the fact that Musk is on the side of Trump right now, that makes this even more interesting, because if you think about it, Elon Musk is waging civil war against the white hats and the red hats inside the industrial military complex. He's actually picked a side, and he's now biting the hand that feeds him, which I think is very interesting. But again, with Musk, how I look at it, some of his partnership and his friends concern me. Like those that are tied to the PayPal mafia, like Peter Thiel especially, and Sergey Brin, like those relationships, those are very, very, very complicated. And the last time that we've seen economic and political might like this, this is what happened at the end of World War II when the United States really went off the rails. So I think in this next 20 years, Musk will be at the center of many of the economic and political reins. I'm going to tell you the reason I don't trust Elon 100% like I trust Trump. Trump came out and fully supported Bitcoin. Musk hasn't. Musk has come in, bought it, sold it. He's supported, you know, shitcoins like Dogecoin. And I know the reason why he's doing it, because he needs the shitcoin to drive his businesses. He knows that rehypothecation of money is absolutely germane to his economic and engineering prowess. There's no question about that. But I don't think, you know, people around the rest of the world really understand that little nuance. And that's the reason why he needs to be kept on a leash. Right now, I think he's okay. But do I trust him long term? No, I don't. Because I know where his bread is buttered. And you know what they say in the United States? Incentives dictate outcomes. Therefore, if you really take that out to the nth degree, as long as he's paid by the industrial military complex and the fiat bankers, he's always going to kiss their ass.
You've spoken extensively about decentralization being the key to most things. How do we do that as a way of pushing back?
Well, I think I've actually lived my last 20 years of my life showing it. I started decentralizing science and medicine. I teach people about the key things about energy and thermodynamics. They're all based on three factors: light, water, and magnetism. When you optimize those effectively, you cut your umbilical cord to centralized healthcare. I've already told you the answer for money. The key is you have to sell your fiat money and put it into Bitcoin. Why? Because there's no central controller for Bitcoin, just like there's no central controller for healthcare, meaning that if you don't have the light and dark cycle perfectly great, and when you begin to realize that the light and dark cycle is exactly what the industrial military complex has used as the major weapon against us, all of a sudden, you distill this whole story down and you say, God, this is not that difficult. So what did I do with Bukele, you know, 2 years ago when I sat in his basement? I told him the biggest way to fix this is make Bitcoin legal tender and then put a constitutional amendment in to block medical tyranny, because that's the angle of attack that the industrial military complex has used against us in the United States. And now they're generalizing it to every other zip code on the planet. That's really the story of the last 4 years. So I don't think the diagnosis or the treatment plan is that difficult. I think the big thing is that people are going to have to elect the right leaders and get out of their way, and let's see what they do. And right now, the way I look at it, RFK, Elon, and Trump all said that they're going to put a hatchet to the bureaucracy. Okay, let's see what they do. They'll have 4 years to do it. If they do it, then just like I told you with Bukele, then you give them more rope to hang themselves. I think if you go the opposite way with Kamala and Tim Walz and the industrial military complex that supports them, if you're a Bitcoiner, you're going to love this. Why? Because you're going to have literally a Bitcoin economy explode. You're going to be wealthier than wealthy can be. It's the craziest part. that actual total communist socialist control of the United States is going to be absolutely fabulous for the less than 1% of people that own Bitcoin in the United States. And I happen to be one of those people, but what am I telling you clearly? I don't really want that. But I've used Bitcoin as that hedge because I believe most of the people in the world, most of the people in my country are fucking useful idiots. They're obedient idiots that have been partaking in Circus Maximus for 50 years and not realizing what's going on. And unlike the people of El Salvador who actually made the correct diagnosis at their 2019 election, why do you think my ass is here now, my friend? Because I want to be around people that see the world through the correct lenses, not the lenses of the globalists. That's why I live here.
Do you think we're going to be having the same conversation in 25 years' time? Or do you think that there is an optimistic outlook?
I'm going to tell you, I hope that we're having this conversation because if the wrong team wins this election, I don't think you're going to be having any discussions with Uncle Jack. I think you're going to be in financial repression that's going to be 100x worse than what we faced in the Great Depression from 29 through 40. And I believe that 50 generations of humanity will live through what the people in the Dark Ages lived through. Do I believe that there'll be oases? Yes. Am I optimistic? Yes. Do I think people are finally starting to awaken from the slumber? Do I think that COVID was the biggest mistake the industrial military complex ever did? Yeah, because they have done something that is blatantly obvious even to the people that supported them. And the irony is the people that supported them are the ones that are dying the most because they rolled their sleeves up and took the jab. The jab has been devastating to the people who complied. In fact, I use the term that the compliance boomerang is undefeated. And it turns out sometimes death of bad thinkers is actually a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And, you know, this has made me a lightning rod on social media when I point this out, because they're like, well, how could you advocate for death? Well, I wasn't the first one that came up with this idea. Max Planck came up with it and he said, science improves one funeral at a time. Well, I believe that society and civilization does too. Now, I know where we need to have several funerals in the papacy, you know, with the Jesuit priest from Argentina, from a Perón regime who's communist. And I think in the royal family, where King Charles supports fully what Klaus Schwab says. And these are problems. These people need to have multiple funerals, and we need to have their friends and family go through these multiple funerals. We've already seen, you know, that the royal family has got a history of taking out people they need to take out, Princess Di and now Kate Middleton. Once they've secured, you know, their new ruler, they don't seem to give two shits about things. But the bottom line, the real way you eliminate these people is you do it economically. Once you take the power of rehypothecation and usury away from the families that control all the central banks in the world, dude, this is like removing, you know, wood from a burning fire. That's effectively what Bitcoin did. That's what Bukele did. And this is the reason why you now hear bankers, the IMF and the World Bank, talking shit about El Salvador. But yet, what does Wall Street say about the sovereign bonds of El Salvador? They are now the best in the world. And this happened literally in 4 or 5 years from a small little president making the decision to put his middle finger up at the usury of the people who finance the world, who finance sovereigns. I think it's the most untalked about story in the world. And people don't realize that how this story links to just about everything else that is going on in your own country, going on with COVID, and going on with really why people are in Ukraine, why people are fighting this war, why people are doing the things they're doing in Israel and Gaza. These are all tied to the same stories. The people that support the war in Gaza are the same people that are behind the usury laws, behind central banking. The people that they propped up in World War I to try to get Russia and the United States back, those people all went to Argentina and they all went to Ukraine. That's where they've been harbored since then.
How can I keep up with you and your work?
Simple thing is, my handle everywhere is Dr. Jack Cruz. There's a lot of people out there trying to steal my name. You'll find me on numerous podcasts. I've probably done 500, 600 podcasts. I've been banned on YouTube but banned from comments, not banned from my videos, because some of my videos are pretty popular. And I have a book on Amazon that you can read about the science called The EpiPaleo RX. I have a lot of free blogs that are on jackcruz.com. Most of the things that I teach people in decentralized science and politics are present on my website form. That's at jackcruz.com/forms. And if you're interested in how deep I get into the decentralized science, which is pretty deep, we didn't really talk about that on this podcast, which I'm happy about because I'm kind of sick of talking about it sometimes. You can find that on patreon.com/drjackcruz. That science is there. I charge a very nominal fee. Why do I do that? Not because I need your $5 a month. It's the cost of a coffee. The reason I have to do it is I have to protect myself from the people that want to put me out of business, which is the medical community. They don't like my information. They don't like that I'm trying to teach people how to stay away from the sausage grinder that is big pharma and industrial healthcare in the United States.
I really enjoyed your conversation with Danny Jones.
Good. I think that's a good one for people to listen to because I think it's a call to arms for all of us. It's a call to wake up savages because I think, like you've pointed out in this podcast that I really liked, that you gave me the leeway for people to understand that each one of us has local political problems in our country, but ultimately they always funnel back to alloidial title and alloidial money. And I think the Danny Jones podcast got that idea out. And I think all the podcasts that I've done since then, you're beginning to see how all the dominoes fit and where the cards are. And I think if we, the people in each country, begin to take some of those things out and we can get people in South Africa to begin to buy Bitcoin and, you know, block the bankers, block the De Beers mines, block the blood diamonds, we do all that, dude, we can totally take back our world. There's enough savages out there and there's not a lot of the globalists. The problem is the globalists just have the money, but much like Plato's allegory of the cave, if you decide to put your hands out, they will put the cuffs on and you will enslave yourself. What I'm telling people is not to do that. I'm telling you to fight the man in any way you can. And the best way for you to do that, even without a gun, is to buy Bitcoin. Because what are you doing? You're taking away their energy source, which is bad money that's based on compound interest. Take it away from them. If you take that away from them and you opt out of that Fed system, opt out of the central bank system, there is no bigger vote in gaining your freedom back than that. And that story is unfolding in front of your eyes in the country that I'm in right now. They've done it, and your country can do it too.
Dr. Jack Cruz, Uncle Jack, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
No problem.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.